Welcome back to Nkwazi Unfiltered, the podcast that brings you some of Zambia's most interesting individuals. We've had all sorts of individuals who've done great things in the country show up on this podcast. And as always, we have a very interesting individual who's going to be talking about his journey in a field that not many people have ventured into. And that said, he's in a field that literally creates and churns out superstars. You'll understand what I mean shortly. But the long and short of it is our guest today is a man who was brave enough to venture out into the world of starting a football academy. And that academy has produced some individuals of note, and we'll talk about them a little bit later. But beyond that, he's gone on to own a football club, a very successful football club at that, which continues to find raw talent, develop this talent, and compete at the very highest levels of football in Zambia. Now, by now, you've probably started to get a sense and an inkling of who this individual is. And so, without any further suspense, please welcome our guests today, Mr. Lee Kawanu.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure coming here for the first time.
We're really happy to have you here. We've been trying to track you down, but you're a man who's constantly on the go.
Okay.
Trying to obviously keep the club going and also the academy and doing some incredible things.
Thank you.
We just wanted to get into an understanding of who you really are.
Yeah.
Right now, I think it's safe to say anybody who has anything to do with football in Zambia knows who you are.
Well,
yeah, you're a household name. I mean, your modesty is
I wish it wasn't like that, but
you can't go anywhere without becoming like that. It's impossible for you to go anywhere without being identified now. That's him. So in football circles, we know who you are.
Yeah.
But before you ventured into football, who were you? What were you up to? Because obviously this is a journey that you've gone full throttle into now.
Yeah.
But before that, what kind of activities were you into?
Well, to give you a short brief, I was born in Russia.
Right.
To a Russian mom and a Zambian dad.
Right.
Who was there for studies, engineering. Both of them are engineers.
Right.
So we moved back to Zambia in 1980.
Hmm.
When I was 2 years old. So that kind of gives away my...
Exactly. Are you looking good for that?
For those who know what their maths. But yeah, so yeah, I grew up in Kafue. When we came back, my dad started work at Nitrogen Chemicals of Zambia. So
That
was kind of the place I created my character. That's why even the football passion grew from there. My dad was... always like a team manager of a team when we're young, you know. So, yeah, I grew up around football. I grew up just a normal teenager with no ambitions of running a football club, only ambitions of making it big in life. You know, everyone's just that kind of. Yeah, so I went to college in South Africa. I didn't complete because I knew from the time I got to college that I would never work for anyone.
Right.
I made that decision in the first year. So I started a business while at school. I used to sell computers, laptops. Mm-hmm. That time, 2001, 2000, it was like, you know, it was hard to find such things in Zambia. Yeah. So I found a market and I used to come secretly. My mom never knew. Now she knows.
But the secret is out.
No, I told her eventually. But anyway, I used to sell laptops, cell phones and things like that.
Yeah.
Missed a few exams, so it meant I needed to carry on. And at some point, I decided I was making a bit too much money to stay in college. So I stopped and moved back to Zambia, moved to Kafue. Two old gentlemen, coaches, came to a shop. I opened a business center.
Right.
Internet cafes were hot those days, early 2000. So, yeah, these two old men came in with a list of like 40 players, Jackson Mwanza being one of them.
Mm.
Was still in grade 10 at the time, I think. And that's how the football thing started. So before football, I was a business-minded person.
Hmm.
And then I went into football like almost like a charity, you know, because I grew up around it in Kafue. There was so much football. Nitrogen Stars was doing well in the 80s when we grew up. And it was sad to see it die completely like that. So before football, I was a dreamer, dreaming about making it big in business. That's what I was.
Did you actually play football?
I played chimpombo, obviously, growing up in Kafue. I played, you know, barefooted. They never allowed me to wear shoes because no one had shoes in the pitch. So, yeah, it was fun. It was mostly fun. I never played professionally. I played at school. I played at college a bit, but always more in management. I think I was raised, you know, an administrator more than a footballer. Yeah.
Okay, so you've always had a sense for the business side of the game.
Yeah, no, not always. I would say that would be a lie. I mean, I went into it just as a charity, as a fun thing, you know, just the thought. That time was the early days of Abramovich, you know, people owning clubs, and people came to me and said, "You can own this club." It was a dream, you know. My dad was a scout from Ghana, by the way, as well. So we were always close and around in Ghana whenever they were in Lusaka, the best on Chambeshis and all those, players that were big at the time.
Right.
Some that died even in the crash. We'd, you know, after the game, if Ghana wins, we'd be at the hotel Pamosi with them for dinner. So it's, you know, it's something that sticks in your head.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I grew up around football.
I guess it was written in the stars that you'd always have something to do with football.
Yeah, so when it came up, it was like, you know, it was a no-brainer, but it wasn't business. There was nothing to do with business. It actually was the opposite. It drained that business and two other businesses after that. Before I realized that maybe it should be the business itself, you know, because it kept on bringing down my businesses, you know.
And in terms of, obviously, you mentioned Abramovich, and that became basically a role model, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And people started to see the reality of actual purchasing of teams.
Yeah.
At which point did you get into a state where you said, okay, this is beyond just me being charitable and helping this team out. This actually has the viability. And obviously, having learned something, a thing or two from your previous businesses, and obviously being business-minded, when was the aha moment when you just said, okay, this is it?
Well, the build-up was, I mentioned Abramovich, but, you know, there are people like Anif Adams, you know, who were selling players. So we saw that, you know, as we were starting the team in 2002, you know, in Kafue, would hear about players being sold in Asia somewhere, you know, for $50,000, $90,000. So. But eventually, when I realized it can be a business, is that Chisamba Lungu deal. We loaned him to Zanaco for a season and a half, I think. And we got some interest in Russia. So when that happened, I think we made $50,000, which felt like a lot at the time.
Yes, obviously. And back then,
it's now only enough maybe for a quarter of a season for us.
Right.
But at that time, I mean, it allowed me to buy a bus, you know, bought a vehicle for myself and bought a lot of new players. And that's when I realized that I needed to focus more on the younger players. They don't demand much.
Yeah.
They just want to play. You know, you give them a 50 kwacha for a win. It was more than enough for them.
Just raw passion. Yeah. They're just hungry for the game.
So that's about the time, I think around 2008. When that deal happened, 2009 is when I decided to rebrand. So even the logo changed. This is how the Crocs brand also started, you know, came up. And then we just changed our whole system. But when it really became a business is when I met Mr. Frederick Kanute.
In
2015. At the time, I was in FAS and I was in charge of youth football in Zambia, you know, as an executive member. So naturally, when he started his agency, he spoke to Carlo about Patrick Ngoma, a player that was quite hot at the time. And he had a deal for him at Olympic Lyon. So that's how we met, and it didn't work out. But eventually, I whispered to him about Patson, but he was a bit young at the time.
Right.
He said, "I'll keep monitoring." Fast forward to 2016, 17. Patson went to Red Bull Salzburg, and that's how our relationship with Fred started. And that's how the real business began.
Then it began.
Yeah.
So did you, when young people show up and they're keen to play, would you say you have an eye for raw talent? And what sets them apart? What sets a Patson Daka apart from the kid who just wants to kick a football around?
It's a simple thing. It's the mentality.
Mm.
Patson is not super talented. He's got speed, most likely faster than any player in Zambia.
Right.
Maybe even ever, you know. But skill is not much. He's not good 1v1, you know what I mean?
Mm.
He's very good at goal. Not of late, but we all know he's great at finishing.
Finisher. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you sometimes can miss it, you know what I mean? But there's no real science that's there. So
right.
Sometimes there's just a special, the same way you see a player like Enoch Mwepa and say there's something special about him.
The computer.
It's the same thing about how we spot the talent.
Mm.
I can't tell you exactly what happens, but I can spot, you know, sometimes even just from a few touches of the ball.
Right.
But it's obviously, muscle memory of the
brain. Over time, I've seen this before.
But the mentality, I think I would say, is the number one thing. Because talent we have, you know, there's a lot of talented players.
Yes.
But then what sets one above the other, who makes it in Europe, is the mentality. And I think anyone who's followed Batson knows that he's mentally strong.
Yes.
We remember what happened to him at the national team, at Power Dynamos, where he was being booed by his own fans.
Correct.
But he came out of that and did better. And, you know, it's the same thing most likely will happen now to him. You know, but that's what makes a great player. It's the mentality and attitude.
So you've had a chance to see players, some of the greats of old and the new crop that's coming up. Would you say the exposure, courtesy of, say, satellite television and has had an impact on the way young people show up? Are they better prepared for the rigors of football? Or back then, was it just raw talent? What are you seeing?
No. Back then, there was structure.
Hmm.
We probably don't see it now and don't understand it, but the mines brought structure. And there was structure just in the country with the schools and everywhere. So people like Kalusha, you might think he just came from nowhere, you know, he was just telling, no. Kalusha went through proper training, wherever he went to, what's up, there must have been a club where he went as an academy and probably had people who knew what they were doing with the kids, unlike now. Our players are not prepared. The fact that we even compete, to be honest with you, is a miracle. It just shows how much raw talent we have.
Mm.
We're basically winning with raw talent, which is practically impossible these days because everyone's watching everyone. All our games, our players are known to the opponents all the time.
Yep.
They know our weaknesses all the time. They use technology. We don't have that. We don't use much of the technology that other people use. You know, so we are quite disadvantaged, in my view. And our players are not as prepared as the players like Kalu and these guys that made it those days. You know, those guys were well prepared. And that's the gap we're trying to close now with academies like ours. And I'm happy to say that I see a few other academies that, you know, some of them are leaning on us, some are doing it on their own out there. But I think we're getting there. It's a very, very exciting time for the football business right now and the academy business. I would urge you to jump on it if you want to become a millionaire.
I'm liking the sound of the millionaire bit, but clearly there's a lot of hard work.
A lot. I mean, I've been doing it for 24 years this year.
Hmm.
Yeah. And when did it start paying off? 2017, when Patson moved. I think that's the first deal I would say actually made sense.
Right.
You know, because the first $50,000 was gone within weeks.
Just sunk back into the business.
Straight back in.
Yeah.
Even the Patson money went back in, but at least it's money that kept on giving.
Right.
You know, the kind of deals that Mr. Kanute gets for us are deals that are not one-off.
Mm.
You know, that's why I've stuck with him
all
these years, you know, because the deals that he pushes for, they advantage us in Africa. It's the same thing he does in Mali.
Right.
The kind of future sale, you know, that we get, I've never gotten anywhere else. You know, the Samba deal, the Russians outright told us, we don't do future sale.
It's done.
So either take the 50 or we go away.
Go away.
So what do you do? The player is already there, you know what I mean?
True.
So you accept. But Fred, I think, has the right heart for this country. And I hope that we can get other people to work with other clubs who are similar to him.
Fantastic. And obviously with the experience that you've gained over the years, I like the fact that you've highlighted that other academies are also doing their best to upscale the way they're doing things. They're not the gun and run type yeah. of scenario. So obviously with the business evolving, yeah. there's a need to get an understanding of how things are done and then try and scale and replicate in Zambia.
Yeah.
You've had obviously the benefit of interacting with Mr. Kanute.
Yeah.
And we all know he's a legend on the continent mm-hmm. and he's been in the game as a player. We yeah. watched him do incredible things on the pitch, and then he evolved into this man who's just out to make African players shine.
Yeah.
How have you scaled it into your academy and into your team? Mm-hmm. And what advice would you give to someone who wants to venture into the academy business?
Well, Fred has been hands-on with this project, to be honest with you. And I think, I'll always appreciate what he's done. And Zambia should appreciate what he's done.
Yes.
But I feel also, to some extent, it's a win-win situation with him. I mean, we've got some of the biggest stars for his agency, Patson Daka and Enoch Mwepu,
yes.
you know, transferred. And that's kind of put him on the map as well as an agency, you know what I mean? Or as a consultant. We work with him as a consultant, by the way, just to clear it up. So he comes here every year, twice sometimes a year, or sends coaches to us. So his knowledge and stuff, it's what you see now and what you're going to see the next 3 to 5 years,
right?
Which maybe we'll talk a bit about, is the work that is put in from about 2015 when we met. Mm. We really started putting structures together around 2017 when he physically came here for the AFCON under 20. So the changes that you've seen around the infrastructure, investment in infrastructure, investment right. in scouting, investment right. in the branding, you know, just the look of it, investing in coaching.
Mm.
We don't just rely on the coaching courses that FAS gives us or CAF gives us.
Right.
We do extra coaching, you know, knowledge from other coaches.
Yeah.
You know, we had a Spanish coach just come now for 2 months before for preseason, you know, which helped our coaches a lot.
Right.
And
right.
then they work with our U12 coaches all the way to the senior team. So there's been a huge impact on what Fred has done and how he's working. And I think it's trickled also to others, because people might not see it, but we work with a lot of people in all provinces.
Right.
You know, we invite right. teams for tournaments. We have a league going, by the way, which is for under 12 and under 14, just to give these kids some activity and also to help us scout the compounds around.
Some talent identification.
Exactly. Right. And also to teach the coaches and the academies how they should be running their academy. They will not do it at the same level, but at least the basics should be done.
Yeah.
Once we start doing the basics slowly, we start seeing an impact.
I'm liking the fact that you're bringing a method
yeah.
to the whole process, and yeah. it's a scientific
approach. And that's the challenge we have. A lot of people just say, we need to invest more in youth football. Like, no one really says, what do you mean by that?
What does that mean?
Physically. So these are things we need to start doing. And you might have heard, but and luckily the FAS members have bought into the idea, I've shared it, and I'm hoping that eventually it will be taken on, where we have academies under an association that can be regulated,
right,
monitored, and right. also somewhere to take resources. Let's say FIFA has footballs or boots that they give away, then we know where to take those things. If FIFA's got a course, we know who to train. You see what I mean?
Right.
The challenge we have is we've had maybe 2 or 3 youth courses in the last 10 years or 15 years. And whenever they've done them, you are training senior coaches. You know, coaches like Wetson are trained in youth coaching, but they mostly deal with senior players.
Right.
So it's good they have the knowledge, they can pass it on, but we need to now invest in the coaches
Correct.
That are actually
Correct.
Dealing with the academies in the community.
Correct.
You know, so we can only do that if we know who they are. And if we have an association, then we can start to monitor. You know, and that's the direction I think we should start going, because if we are serious about physically doing something about grassroots football, then we have to have a structure, because otherwise, how do you do anything about something? You don't know where the kids are.
True, yeah. because I think what tends to happen is you have raw talent,
yeah.
but because the fundamentals of discipline aren't instilled from an early age, when this player breaks into the big time,
yeah.
it's not embedded. It's not second nature.
Yeah.
They don't have the time to be able to become as good as a kid who has had the opportunity to learn the fundamentals and
from
the basics from an early age. And so they then, that talented advantage carries them so far.
Yeah.
And then they falter because now the discipline, which you highlighted,
yeah.
starts to miss.
Yeah.
Now, I know for a fact that years ago, if a child got up and said, I want to be a football player, mm-hmm. they'll probably be beaten within inches of their lives and say, don't talk nonsense here. Yeah. No one does anything as with this football thing. Yeah. Seeing the likes of Patson make it, the likes of Enoch,
yeah.
how has that assisted? Because I know in some places, very talented people were stopped from playing football by their parents.
Yeah.
Coaches would go and plead, and the parents have said, this is nonsense, get out of here before I beat you, even you up. Has that helped to some degree?
No, that's still happening where parents are worried about, which is natural. I think that's a parent's job to make sure their child gets the best in their life, you know. And if you don't see football, which is true, to be honest with you, if you have to be very honest, the chances of making it to Europe, if you just do the numbers, just roughly, let's say there are 10,000 kids or players in Zambia playing actively at all levels, from amateur to the Super League.
Right.
How many players went to Europe last year? You know?
Yeah.
Maybe 8, 10. Mm. 2 or 3 of them being Celtic players.
Right.
You know, others having been seen from the under-20 national teams and stuff that moved, you know. But you're talking about maybe 10 players out of 10,000 moved last year.
Yeah.
So what are the chances? So if a parent says you're wasting your time, it's possible they could be right. The chances are slim. Even if you go wider and say, okay, what about those playing in the Super League and in Division 1 who are earning money from Red Arrows and what? It's still a small pool. You're talking about hundreds of players against thousands of kids who are trying to get in those. And by the way, in Europe, there are millions of kids from Asia and Brazil and who are trying to get into. So when a player like Jonathan Kalimina gets into Red Bull Salzburg, believe me, it's nothing short of a miracle, especially that we don't have the structures in Zambia to produce that kind of player.
Right.
You know, we're not set up to produce such players.
Mm.
You know, like you rightfully said, the basics have to be done between the ages of about 5 to 14.
Right.
We are now getting the players at 9, 10, okay? Mm. Only because they need to be able to look after themselves where we keep them at the complex.
Right.
You know, at least wash their socks and their uniform when they go to school, you know. So we wish we could go earlier, but I mean, it would be difficult for a parent in Zambia or to give a 6-year-old kid. It's already hard. I'm surprised, honestly, that they allow us to take these kids, but that shows how much work we've put in.
There's credibility.
To make the kids comfortable and all that. Yeah.
They believe they'll be safe.
Yeah, so these are some of the things that in the background people don't see, but are very key in my view. Yeah.
Obviously, it's been a steep learning curve to get from, hey, I'm just helping out, to finally running a business.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you can look back on in the development and the growth of the business side of things that at the time seemed like a disaster that you can laugh at now?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of sacrifices and a lot of moments, you know. I'll give you a simple story where I was running the team at the time with just my team manager and the coaches, you know, so I would have to make sure the camp house has food and I had to do everything myself because we couldn't afford to have. And we were in the National League, but by then it was zoned like South and North.
Yes, yes.
And we had a game in Eastern Province in Chipata, and we only had enough money for fuel to get there, the meals on the way and supper. We didn't have money for accommodation. And the team was waiting in Kafue to start off. And you know, the trip to Chipata takes long. So now they're looking at the time. It's 9 o'clock and we're still not ready. So we tell them, okay, start off. They get to Lusaka. I write a couple of those days. We're using checks. We had some checks for Kafue Celtic. Wrote 2 checks, one for accommodation, one for food. They took it there. I knew it was a weekend. They can't cash it. So that gave me time to start searching.
Searching for
funds, make sure that on Monday there's money in the account. So, you know, we had situations like that made us stronger, I guess, you know.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But it's sacrifices like those that then build resilience.
Yeah.
And when you make it past challenges like that, you can look back and say, oof,
Yeah, we had those like all the time. So I think they just make, they toughen you and you just reach a point. But I had so many moments when people told me, you know, just stop. My brother would tell me, just stop. You know, I couldn't pay rent for the shop anymore. I couldn't pay rent for my house, you know, barely eating because I was keeping people at the team. Everything that was made was going to the team. So at some point I had to go and I can laugh about this now. I accepted, I went to stay with my brother on his couch. You know, he was, when we were at school, while I was hustling, I made sure he was just focused on school because he's always been good academically, you know. And by 20, he had two degrees. So by 22, 23, he was a manager. So I, sleeping on his couch was very comfortable at the time.
Benefit of free food, bro.
Free beer. I was working at Zambia Brewery, so it was free beer every weekend. All I made for myself was for the team. So it was some relief for me. And it's funny now, but I think those are the moments that kind of made me who I am now. And honestly, there's nothing apart from death that can stop me from what I do. There's nothing that can come in my way, I don't believe. And I'm happy that, you know, they always say that the best way is to make money from what you love doing.
Yes.
I mean, I've loved watching football since I was a kid. So now I'm making money watching football.
To be able to earn from what you're passionate about.
It's been fulfilling so far.
I hear you.
Yeah.
And so obviously you're asked for advice regularly.
Yeah.
And a young player shows up, they show potential. What is the one non-negotiable that you tell a player and you say, I see potential, I see where you're going, but here's the one thing you've got to do if you want to make it to the next level?
Well, of course, I mean, it's a cliche, but it's discipline. It's standard. You know, discipline covers everything. If you have discipline, you're going to listen to the coach's tactics and follow the instructions in training and in the game. That will make you better. If you have discipline, you will not eat junk. You will not eat... you not take sugary drinks and things like that, which are very important these days for players. And that's why, you know, we take such things for granted. For the time you sleep, a player has to be asleep at least by 10 o'clock, you know, preferably 9 o'clock. The player should be tired from training and should go to sleep and get enough rest to recover the body, you know.
Right.
We don't pay attention to these things until our players get to Europe. Even if it's a small, these farmers leagues that we call farmers leagues, our players go there and they come, they call us and say, you know, we thought at Celtic it's intense training.
You're killing me out here.
This is another level. And we always tell, we've been telling you, what's different now that you've gone there? Why are you doing things differently, you know? Is it the skin of the people who are instructing you? What are we doing wrong for you not to understand that you have to do a bit more? You know, so these are small things that are there in football, and they make a difference, you know, for these guys. And you underestimate that when they go to Europe and the physical strength of the players that they play against.
Right.
They are strong here. Our players usually are strong because of the diet we put them on and the gym we do. And but when they get there, they get shocked. You know, they go for, we have some players go for a tournament called Next Generation at Red Bull Salzburg, where we join the Malian team with some of our players. You know, so these boys go and experience this playing against Bayern Munich, they play against Newcastle, you know, like under 16s.
Right.
And these boys, when they see them in person and, you know, go up against them, they get shocked how strong they are. But that's because of what they do, you know, to look after themselves. Yeah.
They build it up from scratch.
Yeah.
And I think it's good that there's a lot more understanding that talent is not enough.
No. So I have my own fake formula. It's just, I use it just as an example. Talent is only about 20% of what you need to make it. So now you need all that 80%, which is discipline, what you eat, how you sleep, you know, the just ability to understand things, intelligence on the pitch, leadership, attitude, all those things that make up the remaining 80%. That's why you have players like Carragher, who never had much talent, in terms of, you wouldn't see him dribble or anything but he would get the work done, played at the highest level.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's because he filled up the 80%. This is my own analysis, by the way. Don't take those things.
No. it's a thumb fact, but it's something that you've watched and observed.
So that's the way I see it. I see that because I look at very talented players that have gone nowhere. And we've all watched them in Zambian football. You know, you see certain players, you're like, this player is better than this one. Mm. Like, I can tell you for sure, there were at least 5 or 6 young strikers who were better than Patson. But Patson worked harder, you know, was more focused, and just had the right mentality, you know.
Yeah, that's, it's very interesting. You mentioned your brother earlier.
Yeah.
And it's almost as if you're two sides to a coin.
Yeah.
He is extremely extroverted. You hear him a mile away. He's the life of the party.
Yeah.
And you, on the other hand, we just sort of, there he goes. We see you, but we seldom hear you.
Maybe it's because he was born in Zambia and I was born in Russia. We are different in that way.
Yeah.
You know, he's out there. He likes to enjoy holidays. I enjoy holidays, but he loves them.
Oh, yes.
Than me.
No, he's the life of the party.
So I've learned that side from him, by the way. Of late, I'm starting to enjoy my life a bit more.
Finally. He's a good teacher.
Yeah. But yeah, he's more social than me.
Yeah.
I've been forced to be social because of football.
Yeah.
You have to mix. I don't mind mixing with people, especially football people, especially when we're talking about the similar things.
Yeah.
You know, but to be taken out of my element sometimes, that's why you will not see me much in clubs. I think I did enough in college for this, for a lifetime.
A lifetime's worth.
So I'll try some other fun stuff for now.
But what does your downtime look like? So obviously when you're not at the club or the academy, what's an easy day for you?
Yeah, it's a bit rare because my house now is next to the academy. So training to the main team starts at 9, reserve team at 11. We have lunch, the baby crocs at 14:30. So there's always football around, to be honest with you. So yeah, my downtime is the kids, take them to the park or somewhere, play parks and game zones and all these things. Or just at home, you know, in the garden with the kids.
How many kids do you have?
5.
Okay. And the mix, girls, boys?
Yeah, 3 girls, 2 boys. But it's a bit imbalanced.
Are you looking to balance it out?
God will decide.
Nice.
But everyone likes, you know, balanced things. We all like balance.
Yeah, right? Balance is good. Yeah. And are they into football as well?
The first one is not, definitely. He loves basketball. So that's okay. I played basketball as well in school. So I don't mind. The little ones, I think one of them maybe, I'm not sure, to be honest with you.
But
if they want to play, they've not shown signs of any special skills. So.
I hear you.
Yeah.
But would you be open to the idea of grooming them into the business?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's one of them. I won't mention which one.
Yeah.
One of them, she looks like she might take over things.
Right.
She's only 5.
But has the look, the feel, and the heart for it.
She's very similar to me, I think. She's quite similar to me.
So right.
I suspect she might be interested because she follows me around a lot in the garden, the fish. You know, she's interested in everything I do. So I hope it stays like that. But you know, you never know. They become teenagers, maybe something more interesting.
But
whatever they decide, it's up to them. It's their life. I chose my life. My man tried to get me back in college, and I thought that it would never happen.
Failed lamentably.
Tried to bribe me with a car, and it still didn't work. Enough education.
Did you take the car, though?
No. I sold my car to open the shop.
The business side of things had taken over. It was curtains.
I had a nice car when I was there, so I came back, sold the car, and did the shop up. Yeah.
That's an interesting passion.
Yeah.
And in terms of growing up, so I know about your brother.
Yeah.
Do you have any other siblings?
I have a half-sister.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we're not very close, but the gap is too big, so.
Right.
But, I have a half-sister.
Okay.
And I have a lot of cousins. I think you know some of them.
Yes.
We've grown up in the same house. You know, when we came from Russia, we stayed with our cousins for some time, so. And we're always there on weekends. So they're kind of like brothers.
Yeah.
It's a big family, the Kawano family.
How much support comes through from the family? I know support, and it doesn't have to be financial or material, but just like to know that family's got me and they're cheering.
Well, now everyone has got me. It's only just funny. Yeah. Everyone sees what has happened.
Yeah.
Everyone is happy for me, and you know what I mean. But I think friends, family, I've been blessed. I can't lie. Mm. You know, it was very tough for a few years out there.
Yeah.
You know, especially when I moved into my brother's house, business was a bit hard, you know. But the close friends I have who are, you know, I've grown up with most of the people that I'm friends with since we were kids.
Yeah.
You know, it's either they were my cousin's friends, you know, like we've been around each other since we were small. So we're quite close and very helpful. And the times I had hard times, I had a lot of help from my brother and my cousins, my friends. So yeah, I've been very lucky in that regard.
Yeah. Most people say, when they mention your name,
yeah,
they say, man of action. he gets the job done.
Yeah.
Doesn't say much, but he just gets things done.
Mm-hmm.
What would you like to be remembered for?
I'll just put it simple. Just creating a new business in Zambia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this academy business, I want to put it on record. In the next 10 years, it's going to make millionaires in Zambia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if people listen to me now, they'll see the benefits. If they come and get advice from me, they can see the benefits in 5 years. If they do it on their own and just follow from afar, they can get it between 5 and 10 years.
Mm.
There's a big opportunity that's open right now for Zambia. Right. And I'll tell you why. The West African market, the Arab market, it's saturated with scouts.
Mm.
So a lot of clubs are now seeking other markets.
Right. And
if you look at the region, Zambia is the most suitable because we have the largest number of pool of talent.
Right.
We have no one coming here really, apart from Neil Karim, you know, and Fred, and a few other agents from South Africa. Maybe. You know, the rest are just there when the AFCO and the team, you know, the under 17 is doing well, then they pop up, make a deal and disappear, which we shouldn't, you know, tolerate. Let's work with people like Karin. Let's work with people like Fred. People who are there that will stick with you and keep looking for opportunities for your players even after they make a big deal. So, yeah, I'm really confident, 100% confident.
Yeah.
The next 10 years are going to change things in Zambia. And that will have a knock-on effect. Because when 10, 20 academies are doing what we are doing, then you have at least two patsons from, you know, two patsons inox from different academies.
Right.
That now translates into the national team's performance. So that's the way I see it. And I hope people will listen. And I'm always open. You're asking about advice and what. Yes, I am open. I have people come from Kalumbila sometimes. They come to visit. They want to understand what we're doing. They want to set up structures. Then we have partner academies who we call their coaches every time Kanute comes or anyone comes. They are here. They are part of the training. And, you know, we do some mini, what I don't know what you call them, but, you know, where you teach the scouts how to scout, what we look for. We make them understand. So they start looking for the right kind of players that we can develop. So yeah, there's a lot going on, and people need to start doing all those things for them to tap in. I'm not saying that if you just say tomorrow if you come and say you've got an academy, automatically you're going to be a millionaire. No, you have to put in the money as well, you know, to get money. It's just like any other business. You can't chance, you know.
So you spend to make
it. You have to spend.
Yeah.
And you have to feel the pain. I always tell one of my friends, if he watches this, you know who he is. You have to feel the pain I felt before you make it. He's always squealing about referees' money and, you know, having to pay for transports and what every week. So I tell him, yeah, you were there when I was struggling. You saw me struggle. Yeah. Now it's your turn to struggle. And then you enjoy.
The school of hard knocks. No shortcuts.
There's no, unfortunately, this one, there's no shortcuts. You can move faster, but not shortcuts.
Yes.
Yeah.
So obviously learning from some of the mistakes that were made.
The ones they don't need to make the mistakes I made.
Now, I think I need to say thank you and give you your flowers. There are a lot of people who keep their cards close to their chest and they want this knowledge to be theirs. I struggle to also go through this.
Yeah.
But I'm hearing you thinking of the greater good. And
yes, there's a reason to that. It's not, I mean, okay, I'm generally a kind person, yes, but there's also a benefit to what I'm doing.
Yeah.
This football thing, the academy thing, it can work like a monopoly. If you're alone, it's harder for you to make it. Because Fred cannot get, you see, right now, I'll give you an example of like the age groups I have. The young Crocs, I would say we have about 6 or 5 players that should be in Euro in the next 1-2 years. Okay, but maybe Fred doesn't have solutions for all 5, you know, all 5 of them.
Right.
So we're going to reach a point where we have too many players than where we can take them. But right. They have the talent and we've prepared them well. So we do need to create a sort of cartel,
right?
You know, where we can regulate ourselves, we can help each other. So if there's a cartel of people doing the same things, if I call 10 scouts from Europe today, or Fred organizes 10 clubs to come and watch a tournament, I don't really have teams that I can call to compete with Celtic.
Right.
You know,
right.
Of a certain age group. So if we say, like, in April, we're looking to do a 2009 tournament. These are boys who are 16 or turning 17, or you know.
Right.
And where am I going to get those, a team that has those players who are 16 and 17 only? You know, whereas our young Crocs is mostly under 18.
Right.
Okay, or under 17. The main team is under 20, you know, with some few boys who are already playing. And so we already have a team, but for us to call such a tournament, we've had such tournaments and then we dominate. And then the scouts see only our players. And when they see only our players, and most of them, if they are good, like Jonathan, already had a solution.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And then they get frustrated, say, okay, so why did we come then if we're only watching Celtic? So this is the reason I really personally need other academies to step up. That way when we're together like that, when we say there's a tournament, we know the 10 clubs to call for that tournament.
Right.
And then the scouts who have a variety. This is what our West African friends are doing. In fact, our West African friends, what they do is the 10 teams will put money together, pay for hotels, pay for flights for some of these people to come. You know, so we're talking about the mid-level, lower teams.
Right.
But the big teams will pay for themselves.
Right.
But they've got ways. These are the ways that you can start, you know, making money. So when the people come, by the time your tournament is over, you've got this club talking to this small academy from Chinsali, which has super players. They're signing deals for $200,000,
$300,000.
This is how football starts to change in Zambia. So that's the reason you see me pushing hard for others to step up. Because I need others for me to show that Zambia is strong. Otherwise, it's not worth it for these people to come here. And the distance, by the way, there's a simple thing that people don't pay attention to. It takes about 4 hours to fly from France to Abuja, let's say, you know.
Right.
Whereas if you want to come to Zambia, you have to go to Dubai overnight and then come here.
Yes.
You know, or Ethiopia and then spend the night and come here. You know, so it's hell to come here. And then you come and see not much. It's frustrating, you see. So this is the reason that you see me pushing so hard for everyone to make it, for more teams to make it. I think it's important that we speak about the school we are building, because it's not just an academy, it's an actual school. It's like a Baobab or Leaks, but for football.
Fine.
It's the first of its kind in Africa.
You've basically adopted the Australian model.
Yeah, where they those are like sports schools or like that, right? But this one's mostly football. So if your kid doesn't want to play football, can't. He or she can't enroll.
Enroll
them. Yeah. So this is basically for those kids that you were talking about school, and I think we should have. It's important that you not. We talk about how I noticed that problem.
Yes.
Parents coming to us, especially like when the kid has finished school, and then they come to us and say, "Oh, my kid has now finished school. Can you take him?" But he's like 16, 17. Our recruitment is ending at 14.
Right.
Simply because we need 4 years till they turn 18,
right?
You know, to prepare them for Europe,
right?
So, yeah. So because of that, the school became a necessity for us because we realized that there's a group of players, not those that are not talented, but there's a very small group of players that are very talented, but they're in these good homes and the parents don't want them to focus on football too much until they finish school. So this school we're building is going to be dedicated to those kind of kids. from right. grade 1 up to 12, two streams. So we're only going to take about 480 kids.
Wow.
So these kids will learn in the morning, have their lunch and meals, and then afternoon they'll be with our coaches on the pitches.
Right.
Training the same techniques that we give our special players.
Right.
So our special players will stay separately. They'll train in the morning, and then they'll go to school in the evening or in the afternoon,
right.
depending on what need they have. So this is something that I've been planning for, I think, 15 years. From the time I said we
yes.
decided to commercialize, but I had no clue how I was going to raise enough money to build such a, to do such a project. But luckily, with the Patson moves and the things which have happened in the last few years, we're able to. I'm happy to say we are on roof level now with the school. And we're hoping, all things being equal, if all paperwork is accepted through the Ministry of Education, we can start by January next year. We're hoping to start earlier, but I have to be realistic.
Yeah.
You mentioned being a man of action. Yes, I do push people to their limits to make sure things are done. But to be realistic, I'm hoping the school will open next year in January.
Amazing. So the best of both worlds.
It
allays the fears of a parent, and they know their child's getting a good education, and they're also pursuing their passion.
And for those privileged kids, I hate calling them that, but just to differentiate, you're almost guaranteed, if we're going to have your kid from grade 1 to 12 and train him every week for that long,
right,
he should be able easily to go to Australia, England, USA, Canada, and get a scholarship, 100% scholarship, just based on the talent.
Based on the talent.
So that's what we offer parents, that, if your kid will not be a professional, at least you'll go to college for free. So whatever you're going to spend for his education is basically his college education. So that's the way we've structured it.
That's true.
Already making connections with colleges. We've had 3 colleges come through so far to see the players, and not only our players, but just in Zambia. And soon you'll be hearing of some going to college.
I love how this story keeps evolving and how you've been playing the long game and not the short game. And the future does look bright.
Yeah.
And I think you're basically creating the template that can be scaled in any part of the country and by different academies. And it's truly wonderful to see a homegrown idea that has global reach.
Yeah.
And here's to the future. All the very best.
Thank you.
And hoping that it grows from strength to strength, and we can look back and say, hey, when we chatted, they were at roof level, but look what's happening now.
Yeah.
So many kids are heading off for scholarships in the Western world and getting the benefits of having been part of an academy that started out as a dream. We are truly, truly grateful for you having spent time with us to share this glimpse into the inner workings of the academy and the club. We wish Kafue Celtics all the very best, and we'd love to see the young Crocs coming up and becoming full-grown Crocs and doing incredible things.
Yeah.
And above all else, thank you for your contribution to Zambian football. I think when the history of Zambian football is written, there's no way your name will not be mentioned in there, because you've played your part, and it's from a heart of passion. And we hope the takeaway that everyone gets from this is that if you stick with what you love, eventually it'll love you back.
Exactly. Exactly what happened.
Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
And here's to the very best.
Thank you so much.
A truly exhilarating conversation with Mr. Lee Kawanu, who is the founder and proprietor of Kafue Celtics Football Club. And of course, the academy that is attached to the club that is identifying the next new talent. It's always a marvel to be able to hear the other side of individuals whom we know from a distance, and to get to delve into what makes them tick and get a deeper understanding of how they've succeeded, the pitfalls. And we're always grateful for the openness to say, hey, we stumbled, we fell, but we got up, we tried again, and we succeeded. We're hoping you'll be next on that hot seat, having a conversation about what makes you tick and what makes you an interesting Zambian. Hope you like and subscribe. As always, catch us on your favorite podcast channel and on YouTube. Nkwazi Unfiltered. See you in the next one.